This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. The skyline of the City of London used to be lined with church spires, but now tall and exotically shaped office blocks have replaced them. And right underneath the walkie-talkie, that sore thumb of a building near Monument, you'll find one of the City Church's most elegant of spires, that of St Margaret Patton's, where I spoke to Becky Banfield, a church watcher, and Christopher Moore, the church administrator, and he was also a beadle for the Worshipful Company of Pattern Makers.
It is quirky and it does sound odd, St Margaret Patton's. It's kind of like a nickname originally because there were certainly four, all dedicated to St Margaret the Virgin before the Great Fire. There's still two, St Margaret Lothbury and here. So in order to distinguish between the different St Margarets, they got an add-on. And Patton's comes from the pattern makers who used to live in the area and worship in this church.
That simple.
It is that simple. And patterns were so common. Everybody wore them. They're basically a shoe that you've put onto the shoe you're wearing. It's a wooden sole with a metal piece to raise you up out of the dirt on the street. They were so common. They're mentioned in passing in Jane Austen books. Samuel Pepys mentions them, but in passing, not as a big description, because they were what everybody was wearing until the streets were paved and clean enough, and then they weren't needed anymore. Yeah. When you come in, if you look straight down the hallway, there's a really nice display by the Worshipful Company of Pattern Makers, which will tell you all about patterns. There's some lovely examples of different patterns, so it's worth just pausing and having a look, give you all the detail about who they were and who they are now. It's still a guild. Their coat of arms has got pictures of patterns on them, and the tools as well. The tools that, because I think the last pattern maker died in the 19th century, but his tools are here. There are actually two guilds who are associated with this church, the pattern makers and the basket makers. Okay. The basket makers have a very small display case just showing some examples of their work.
Can you describe the outside at all?
Look up at the spire. It's the third tallest, although I have also read it described as the second, but I think it's actually the third tallest spire in the city. And it's still lead covered. Of course, it's completely dwarfed by the buildings around it.
Location wise, we're right by the walkie-talkie,
yes,
which just sort of stands out right on top of it. So we've come in. Shall we go into the main bit of the church? You can tell me a bit about that.
Come in, it's just a great big rectangular church. That would have been open galleries on the left-hand side, but it's now used as, I think, meeting rooms, so it's been all enclosed.
And it's simple, isn't it, inside?
Very simple.
Tell me about three features of the interior of this church that you think are worth sharing.
Ought to have a look at the pews which are on each side of us. These are church warden pews. They're enclosed. You open a door to step up into them, and they've got a lovely canopy roof. Yeah. They're really quite decorative.
And can people sit in there?
I don't know if people do in the services, but you certainly can open them
up
and
have
a look. So you open the door and you have to step right up. They're high.
They've got little windows behind them.
Yes, the church wardens are obviously keeping a lookout to latecomers.
Yes, little round porthole windows.
Yes.
So you can see latecomers with nice padded seats. Anything else in here that you think is of interest?
Here up high on this right-hand wall, that cross, it used to be on the top of the spire.
Ah,
and it's a copy of the one at St Paul's. And then underneath it, is a memorial to Charles I, and it says on the top in English, so I can read that bit, touch not mine anointed. And of course, he was the king that was beheaded.
Yeah.
And still at this church, they commemorate the death of Charles I. Every year there's a service in January.
Late January.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't regard Charles as a martyr because he was a king who was rather opulent and a little greedy. But, however, he was a monarch loyal to his subjects. When he went to the executioner's block at Banqueting House in Whitehall on the 31st of January in 1649, he professed that he was a king by divine right, so that anything man had done to him, by word or deed, he would forgive them for. Sounds rather pompous, but actually I think it was well met and well meant. But we have in St. Margaret Patton's, by gift, a mourning board on the south wall, which has the inscription above it, "Touch not mine anointed." So every year we acknowledge Charles King and Martyr Day, and we use the Commonwealth chalice and paten, well, a copy thereof.
Why was the mourning board presented to this church and not any others?
Many other churches have them. Whether they're kept in quite such good condition and in quite such a prominent position, I don't know, because there's still a lot of embarrassment in some circles about even having the nerve to say Charles King and Martyr. We do.
Why did he?
Well, I don't think he was such a bad monarch after all, if you read the history books. He was loyal, he was a grand fellow who liked the high life, but then, you know, somebody with that money and that wealth and riches, you know, he could afford to do it. Probably a little wasteful on the public purse, but there we are.
In terms of the service, what happened that was different today compared with a normal service on a Thursday?
Very little different today, apart from special mention was made of Charles, King and Martyr. Particular mention is in the collect for the day, where we actually have a collect from one prayer book that accepts he should be martyred, and therefore that's the only difference.
But there was a song, I noticed.
You're absolutely right, the last hymn. Yeah, those are words attributed to Charles I around his time, and are set to music of an old medieval tune from the hymnal.
Collect for Charles, King and Martyr. Blessed Lord, in the sight.
Anything else in here that you think is of interest?
Just because we don't see them very often in the church, there's a couple of thank you things. So, you know, for my wonderful recovery after a severe operation. How nice is that? Thanks be to God for life thrice restored. It's just odd, isn't it? It's quirky.
It really is.
That they're thanking in such a permanent way, actually.
Yeah, it's a sort of
painted on there.
So clearly somebody had an operation and recovered and wanted to show his gratitude for it. How lovely.
In front of the beadle's pew, next to the altar, there used to be a punishment bench with a devil carved on it, and that's where, if you were considered particularly wicked, you would have to sit while the service went on.
Oh, the humiliation.
Yes, absolutely. Anyway, somebody stole it.
Maybe somebody had previously been punished, unless it was a recent burglary. A punishment seat.
Yes, actually a punishment
seat. A naughty step.
Yes.
Anniversary of the loss of the submarine K4.
There is a memorial here to, and this is to a submarine that went down, and they do have a memorial service, and people who were associated with it.
And that was in 1918, so that would have been in the First World War.
Yes.
When a series of accidental collisions on a misty Scottish night led to the loss of over 100 Submariners.
And yes, it's a cupboard almost.
Yeah, a cupboard on the wall with opened up and you can see the names of the people who died. And how sad. Wonder why that's connected here. So here we go, this is a little picture of it.
The rector was the uncle of the commander of the submarine.
It's a particular matter for us because their memorial stands in our church.
Today we had four ex-submariners here because the church has a very close connection with David de Beauvoir Stocks, who was captain, skipper, of the K4 submarine. Well, it was more a First World War tin can, which unfortunately was sunk in friendly fire off the Isle of May in 1918. And because his widow, who then later, after she'd been widowed, went on to be a very, very highly regarded woman pilot, not quite an Amy Johnson, but up there with her, she had a memorial made from copper from the keel and wood from the wardroom of the HMS Britannia original training ship. So the connection's been here for a very long time. So they've come today on the 101st anniversary and are taking a check away, and they've presented us with a record, pictorial record, of what went on.
When you come in here, what would you say you feel on entering this one?
It is very simple. You do feel the Victorians left it alone. You've still got very plain windows. Of course, before all the other buildings went up round it, light would have flooded into this church. Wren liked light, and he liked clear glass. So when you see it all stained, that means the Victorians were at it.
Yeah.
And this one is a lovely, simple church. There's no distraction, really. You can come here and comfortably pray. You can sit and contemplate. You can practice mindfulness, whatever it is that's your thing. Yeah. There's no distraction. It's a lovely, calm place to be.
There aren't many distractions, apart from the beeping of the lorry outside, which I've just sort of tuned into. But yes, there is something very peaceful about it, and seemingly untouched.